Ashton. I'm a graduate student at Oregon State University, and we received some funding from NGDC to look at predictive and digital mapping techniques in the high desert of eastern Oregon. So the work that I'm going to be talking about today was used as partial fulfillment for the requirements of my degree in Master's of Soil Science there. So I'm going to start by talking about a few of the details of the soil survey and some of the study area characteristics. Then I'll go in and briefly summarize our predictive mapping methodology, talk about how we field checked our maps, and then summarize the results from 5 iterations of our predictive mapping, and talk about how our approach evolved through that time, and finish up with some conclusions and our plans for future work. So the Southern Malheur County Initial Soil Survey commenced in 2005, and the first mapping was completed during the 2006 field season. This survey is a little bit different than traditional soil surveys you may be familiar with because it is a cooperative effort between the NRCS and the BLM. So the final survey product will include the soil survey information along with a detailed and comprehensive ecological site inventory, which will detail the vegetative communities, the potential biomass production, ecosystem health, etc. So this survey is largely funded by the BLM and it is driven primarily by their needs for rangeland management. So the survey area is about 3.1 million acres. To give you an idea of how big this is, the state of Rhode Island would fit inside the survey boundaries about 4 times over, and it's approximately the same size as the state of Connecticut. So it's a tremendous area. It's about 85% BLM rangelands, of which 450,000 acres have been mapped to date. And my talk is going to focus in this little area in the northeastern corner of the county. So the area has 2 major land resource areas which have similar landforms, notably depressional basins separated by fault block mountain ranges. What distinguishes the two is that MLRA 25 is drained by the Owyhee River, which is part of the Columbia River drainage system, and the Owyhee River Canyon is shown there in the top picture. MLRA 23, however, is comprised of closed basins that have no modern external drainage. So these playas, which are very shallow, seasonally dry lakes, are very common features on the MLRA 23 landscape. So our study area was determined by the 6 quads that were mapped during the 2006 survey, or the 2006 field season, along with the 10 quads that were mapped during 2007. So the 2006 quads outlined in red here were used as training data to produce predictive maps for the 2007 quads, which are outlined in blue. So the elevation in the study area ranges from about 3,300 to about 6,100 feet, and we were fortunate enough to have full IFSAR coverage at 5-meter resolution for the whole county, and that was courtesy of the National Geospatial Development Center. They contracted for the flyover and acquisition of that data, and that was very useful for us in developing landform maps and deriving highly accurate slope and aspect layers and other data sets that we would normally derive from the USGS DEMs. The geology in the area is primarily quaternary and tertiary volcanoclastic rocks, and some of the youngest olivine basalt flows in the area are found here on the Jordan Crater South Quad, and those are believed to be about 2,000 to 4,000 years in age. So there's been some pretty recent volcanic activity in that area. The average annual precip ranges from about 8 to 22 inches, with most of the area being below about 15 inches. The soil moisture regimes are xeric in the uplands and eritic at the lower elevations, and temperature regimes are mesic to frigid, with that frigid break being around 4,500 feet. Dominant vegetation is sagebrush steppe and shrubland, which is primarily a mosaic of 3 subspecies of big sagebrush, along with bunch grasses such as blue bunch wheatgrass and Idaho fescue. Other shrubs such as antelope bitterbrush, rabbit brush, and low sage are also common in this area. So in planning a soil survey for a particular area, how do we make that transition to incorporating digital mapping techniques? Most people are probably pretty familiar with the conventional workflow that's normally used by the NRCS in their mapping, where pre-maps are developed in the office during the winter field season. Then the field work is completed to delineate the map units, and the work is checked at the field survey, or at the field review, and the maps are produced. Meanwhile, back at Oregon State, with our digital mapping techniques, we typically prepare data sets in the computer laboratory, which are used in our predictive models, and then we ground truth our predictive maps, compare our results with the survey crew, and then revise the method as needed. So as long as we're kind of stuck in this loop over here, this is really nothing more than an academic exercise, really. So the optimal goal is to eventually produce predictive maps that we're confident enough in the accuracy of those maps so those can then become the pre-maps and enter the conventional workflow. So exactly how do we go about producing these predictive maps? Well, we start with an area of interest that we want to map. We identify a reference area that already has a soil map, which we can use as the training data. Then we prepare all of the spatial data sets that quantify the soil forming factors or variables that reflect soil forming conditions on the ground. And we can then use the CART sampling tool, which is an extension in ERDOS Imagine. And that software carries out file conversions and establishes a sampling grid. Then the program called C5 is what we use to carry out our decision tree analysis on the reference area. And what that does is quantify the relationships between the soil types and the values for the environmental variables on the landscape in the form of if-then rule sets. And we can then go back and use the CART extension again to apply those rule sets to the area of interest and produce a predictive map. And if anybody's interested in learning a little bit more about the specifics of the procedure, I'd be more than happy to talk with you about that a little bit later. So to actually field check our predictive maps, we work directly with the soil survey crew in Malheur County in their normal mapping activities. And we completed full pit descriptions on major landforms, which are classified to the family level. So in addition to the pits that I helped describe during the season, I was able to get full pit descriptions for every point that they sampled during the season. So that was about 400 validation points total that I had. So for our first predictive map, we used some of the soil survey data from the adjoining county, Owyhee County, Idaho, as training data to predict for four adjacent quads in Malheur County. We had mixed results from this approach, and for some various reasons, we decided to abandon this. This was issues related to inconsistent taxonomy usage and questions about the applicability of the soil landscape model that was used in eastern Owyhee County, or western Owyhee County, excuse me. So for run two, we took four quads that were actually inside the survey boundary that were mapped during the 2006 field season and used those as training data to predict the surrounding annulus of quads. So the six that you see here are just the ones that were mapped and validated during the 2007 season. And our results were much better. I'll talk a little bit about that in just a second. So as the season progressed, the survey crew started to move into some areas that were no longer adjacent to this 2006 data that we were using as the training data. And from our previous experience, we knew that when you start to move away from those training data areas, the accuracy tends to be less because the landscape relationships that you establish in the rule sets tend to break you down as you move away from that. So to remedy that, or so we thought, I acquired the mapping for three quads that were recently completed in the county, digitized those lines, and added that to the training data to produce the predictive map for the surrounding area. So for the third run, we predicted for the soil mapping units. However, when we looked at the predictive accuracy, we found that we had extremely low predictive accuracy at the mapping level. So to try to address some of those concerns, for the fourth run, we used the exact same input data, but instead recoded the training data to the subgroup level, hoping to improve the accuracy. And I'll show you the results of that in just a second. So for run five, we considered some of the major findings from the previous four runs, and some of those were that the closer you are to the training data, the higher the accuracy is. And secondly, using a smaller geographical extent with only the most relevant and adjacent training data tends to produce the best results. So with those things in mind, we produced a predictive map for a single quad, Three Mile Hill, and used the recently completed mapping from the four adjacent quads as the training data to produce that map. So in evaluating the accuracy of our predictive maps, we looked at all of those points that we sampled, looked at the actual classification and the predicted classification, and looked at whether those matched on several different levels from order through subgroup. So from And here this graph shows a percent accuracy on the y-axis and the run number on the x-axis. So from run 1 to run 2, we had a substantial increase in our accuracy when we went from using that Owyhee County data to the training data actually within the survey boundaries. However, this really surprised us. We had a pretty significant decrease in accuracy from run 2 to run 3 when we incorporated a larger amount of training data from that wider geographical extent. And then again, our prediction accuracy didn't increase, it actually decreased slightly, although maybe not significantly, when we went from predicting map units to predicting soil subgroups. But as we had hoped, when we went from run 4 to run 5, with using that smaller geographical extent, less training data, our accuracy increased dramatically. So at the grade group level, we increased from about 50% accuracy to about 83% accuracy. So in theory, our goal might be to get above that 85% threshold that is the accuracy mandate for this Order 2 soil survey at whatever level we're interested in looking at. And of course, the more general the level of taxonomic classification we looked at, the higher the accuracy was, as you might expect. So just to reiterate, we found that better predictions were achieved for the areas adjacent to the training data, where we only used the most relevant and adjacent training data. And predicting for map units are the most detailed level of classification available, and then recoding for the level of interest was the most accurate. That is to say, if we produced or we predicted for map units and looked at subgroups, that tended to be more accurate than predicting for subgroups and looking at subgroups. So we plan to make some recommendations to the soil survey crew about how they can implement some predictive and digital mapping techniques into their normal workflow. And one of these recommendations is the need for an area-specific rubric for some of the taxonomic calls that they're making in the field. In some areas of the county, the only thing separating an aridifolds from a mollifolds may be a single color chip in the Munsell color book. So, you know, depending on the angle of the sun or the time of year that you're looking at it, or even the slight differences in color perception from one person to another, you may have completely different classification for a soil pit. And there's really no landscape signature or any way that we can make those calls with our predictive maps. But I will continue to work with the survey project leader, Alina Rice, through the winter to use these predictive mapping techniques to develop some pre-maps for next field season. And we will also be working together to design a field approach that will incorporate some of these predictive mapping techniques that we've been working on. And one thing that we've discussed is this potential for a checkerboard mapping approach. You can see the quads with the map overlay and the quads in purple have already been mapped so far. And the quads that you see in yellow would be the quads that would be mapped first during the 2008 field season. And we would use the mapping that we have available to produce predictive maps for pre-maps for these quads where feasible. And then use these quads to generate predictive maps for the quads shown in green. So these would be mapped either at the end of the first field season or into the second field season. So I'd like to just say a few words about my experiences working with the survey crew and the folks in the agency over the past couple of years. When we first came to them and started talking about some of our ideas for predictive mapping in Malheur County, talking about what we were going to do, the attitudes both within the survey crew and within the two agencies really kind of ran the gamut from very skeptical to extremely excited. So despite the misgivings that a lot of people had about whether predictive modeling and machine learning techniques could really be applied to soil mapping, we found that we were very well received by the crew, and they were extremely generous with their time and resources in all situations, and we really want to thank them for that. And we also want to thank the National Geospatial Development Center for their funding and support, and thanks to these other people as well. So if you have any questions, go ahead and answer those.
Very good.
Thank you.
Why are you sticking with quads? Why not go to some type of physiographic break?
Well, we did try to stick within MLRAs when we were making the predictions, but we're working on a quad-based system because that is a system that the survey crew is working in at this time, and we're kind of trying to accommodate their workflow in doing this. So we're talking about trying to move away from that quad-based system. Yeah.
Sir, you made a point that I just wanted to make sure I understood. You said that, when you were looking at the map units and predicting subgroups, you did better than in looking at subgroups and using those to predict subgroups. Did I understand that correctly? Could
yes.
You just say something about that?
Yeah.
Why?
To tell you the truth, I'm not entirely sure where that came from, but the map unit composition is a little bit different on this survey than the traditional soil survey map units. So the map units do include the series and their relative abundance within the map unit, but it also includes the ecological site information as well. So it quantifies both the vegetative information and a lot of the climatic information as well. So when we're predicting for map units, there's something in there that's causing the predictions at the lower levels to be more accurate than if we kind of strip away that other information that's contained within the map units and just predict for the subgroups.
Okay, there'll be more time for discussion at the end of the session.
Okay. Thank you, John.